You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
The setting for today's story is all about location, location, location. And Jesus asks a question that almost doesn't make any sense being asked anywhere other than Caesarea Philippi, a beautiful setting north of the Sea of Galilee where the headwaters of the Jordan River, very symbolic for Jews, is gushing right out of the side of the mountain. Even today, it has this mystical quality about it, which is probably why in Jesus' day, it was already the center of worship of Pan. You can still see the niches carved into the cliffside where figures of various gods would have been placed as part of all kinds of altars. In Roman times, when this story was set, there would have been multiple temples to Augustus, Zeus, Pan, and others. Now, imagine Jesus standing in the midst of all of this and asking, "Who do you say that I am?" It takes on a whole different sense, surrounded by all those gods and all those options. But once Peter says, "You're the Messiah," Jesus charges the disciples to not tell anyone about him. Which may seem strange, but it's actually pretty common throughout Mark's gospel, and which makes sense considering that Jesus probably wanted to keep doing what he was doing for as long as possible, and going around making a big deal about him would have brought on the end a lot sooner. So let's listen to this important question in an important place from the Gospel of Mark.
Our words of wisdom for today are from Mark 8, verses 27 to 30. Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" They answered him, "John the Baptist, and others, Elijah, and still others, one of the prophets." He asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Messiah." And he sternly ordered them not to tell anyone about him. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
Walk into the narthex of any number of Protestant churches and you're likely to find the sentimental, blue-eyed, pink-skinned Jesus of artist Warner Salmon gazing peacefully upon your comings and goings. Enter the neighboring Catholic church and you'll probably find the image of a beaten, bleeding, emaciated man suffering on a cross. In the Kevin Smith movie Dogma, there's a campaign to make the church more appealing to a younger, hipper demographic. So it's suggested that the crucifix be replaced with Buddy Christ. Back in 2001, Discovery Channel utilized the latest in forensic technology and, based on mosaic representations and the actual skull of a first century Jew, reconstructed what Jesus might have looked like. The result fomented an outcry from commentators far and wide, with accusations of revisionism and political correctness run amok. Columnist Kathleen Parker was so distraught that she went full-on racist and fretted that the Jesus she knew as a child was being replaced by the kind of guy who wouldn't make it through airport security. Now, I don't know if you remember the old game show, What's My Line? But cartoonist Ron Cobb summed up the competing depictions of Jesus in his 1967 cartoon, "Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up?" So which is it going to be? Truth be told, there are as many Jesuses as there are followers of Jesus. No two people understand or relate to Jesus in exactly the same way. This is one of the reasons why the Bible includes four different versions of the story of Jesus' life, and why Second and Third Baptist churches have spun off from First Baptist Church. Keeping that in mind, consider that just this week, The president said, "I think many of the people that are knocking down these statues don't even have any idea what the statue is, what it means, who it is. Now they're looking at Jesus Christ." Now, let's be clear on two things. Number one, this is clearly just a bald-faced effort to try to gin up fear among easily panicked Christians and demonize those who are protesting Confederate monuments. And number two, you might be scandalized by such a thought, but to be perfectly honest, I have to say that people looking at Jesus Christ, as the president fears, doesn't sound like such a bad idea. Now, I'm not advocating breaking into churches to vandalize art, but I am suggesting that a discerning look at the art we use to depict Jesus is long overdue, because a lot of them have unintended consequences.
Anthea Butler, associate professor of religious studies at the University of Pennsylvania, has said that ironically, during the civil rights movement, Salmon's Jesus was the Jesus you saw in all Black Baptist churches. But this Jesus didn't look like Black Christians. He looked like the people who were beating up Black Christians in the streets or setting dogs on them. And still, having been reproduced over a billion times, that's billion with a B, Salmon's Jesus has come to define what Jesus looks like for generations of Christians in the United States and beyond. It's even been used as a weapon in the Cold War. Back in the 1950s, several groups distributed countless numbers of wallet-sized copies for people to carry with them because they believed that there ought to be card-carrying Christians to counter the effect of card-carrying communists. The whitewashed Jesus, meek and mild, is such a stalwart icon of Western culture that to suggest anything contrary or corrective to that image is tantamount to heresy. Yet around the world, non-Caucasian Christians have always been dissatisfied with the Aryan Jesus. Be it Asian, African, Hispanic, or indigenous, cultures all over the world have represented Jesus metaphorically as one of them. In fact, I did a simple Google search for ethnic Jesus and got 35 million results in 0.6 seconds. Among them was the cover of Bishop John Shelby Spong's book, Liberating the Gospels, where Douglas Andelin takes a stab at rendering a more historically accurate Jesus, in other words, a disheveled Jewish peasant. In 1999, the Church Advertising Network in the UK morphed the image of Jesus and Che Guevara for an Easter ad. African artists portray Jesus as African. Asian artists portray Jesus as Asian. New Zealand artist Sophia Minson has morphed Salmon's Jesus into a Maori native with full-on face tattoo. There are over 34 million others. About 20 years ago, the National Catholic Reporter sponsored an international art competition called Jesus 2000. The winner? Janet McKenzie's Jesus of the People, an image of Jesus modeled on an African-American woman. Back in 1984, the Cathedral of St. John the Divine created a huge scandal when it displayed a sculpture by Winston Churchill's daughter, Edwita Sands, called Christa. It's Jesus portrayed as a female, meant to embody the suffering of women. Wow, did that come down fast. Especially compared to what most Americans are used to, the popular Danish statue of Jesus, the Christus, that portrays Jesus as a cross between a Norse god and a Roman emperor. Yeah? That's more like it, right? So, I'll ask you what Jesus asked the disciples. Who do you say that Jesus is? And does your idea of who Jesus is inform the way you picture him? Or does the way you picture him affect who he is for you? I don't know if you remember a guy named Pete Buttigieg. so much has happened in the last few months that he seems like a figure from ancient history long, long ago, doesn't he? Anyway, he opened a huge can of worms last Christmas by tweeting, "Today I join millions around the world in celebrating the arrival of divinity on earth, who came into this world not in riches, but in poverty, not as a citizen, but as a refugee." Oh my gosh, you would have thought someone had murdered Santa Claus. Countless evangelical Christians simply lost their minds, especially the ones who haven't read the Bible, but somehow know more about it than you and me. I won't even repeat the obnoxious, rude, and biblically illiterate rubbish that poured out of people. But let's be clear. The dictionary definition of refugee is a person who has been forced to leave their country in order to escape war, persecution, or natural disaster. According to Matthew, that's the one that's in the Bible, Joseph, Mary, and Jesus fled to Egypt from their home in Bethlehem to avoid political persecution and death at the hand of Herod. That's the definition of refugee. But people are brainwashed by their prejudices of their upbringing and crippled by their unfamiliarity with the Bible. If they've never thought of Jesus as a refugee before, it doesn't matter if you can point to it right in the Bible. They will refuse to believe it. They can't bring themselves to imagine Jesus in any other way than how they've been indoctrinated, mainly because it may force them to draw their circle of compassion wider than just their own clan or tribe.
So again, I ask, who do you say Jesus is? If you saw him portrayed as a refugee, would that affect the way you think of him? If you thought of him as a refugee, would that affect the way you think of people who are refugees today? If you do actually read the Bible, you'll see Jesus represented as, yes, a refugee, as an apocalyptic firebrand, as a mystical faith healer, a political insurrectionist. As a matter of history, Jesus was likely short, dark-complexioned, obviously Middle Eastern, and a peasant. He was a rabble-rouser who upset the status quo, who broke both civil and religious law, who hung out with the wrong kind of people and subverted the religious and political norms of his time. He was so controversial that he was publicly executed by the government. Okay, so here's the part that warranted the disclaimer at the beginning of the message. Are you ready? One thing that Jesus was not was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed suburbanite with great hair and a winning attitude. Furthermore, and I know this is going to be a huge shock to some, there's not a single white Anglo-Saxon Protestant in the whole Bible. I've looked. We're just not there. So maybe it's time we start expanding our ethnic palette a bit, knowing that one, we'll never know what Jesus really looked like. And two, some of the images we've forced on others have not been helpful. And three, Jesus would rather have us spending our time doing what he taught us to do instead of imposing indefensible ideas on others. So, who do you say Jesus is? I'm not saying we should throw out the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus. After all, that representation brings comfort and familiarity to blonde-haired, blue-eyed people. But what I am saying is don't get caught up believing that Jesus actually looked like that, and then being seduced into believing that that image establishes the objective superiority of blonde-haired, blue-eyed people over everyone else. That's just another way the church has allowed space for white supremacy and anti-Semitism to thrive. And we need to repent of that. Look, all of this is to say, if someone wrings their hands and bemoans the fact that before you know it, these malcontents are going to be taking down statues of Jesus, don't get your knickers in a twist. You can just say, Let's talk about that. Maybe that's not a bad idea for some of them. Or even better, let's put up a picture or a statue of a female Jesus, or a Black Jesus, or a Korean Jesus, or a Native American Jesus, a homeless Jesus, a gay Jesus, a Muslim Jesus, right next to that blonde-haired, blue-eyed, Aryan Jesus. But let's start thinking more deeply about the cultural, emotional, and spiritual impact of the way we depict Jesus, or other historical figures for that matter. In this season of self-examination and holding institutions to account for their culture of systemic injustice, we need to have the courage to make a clear-eyed evaluation of the mistakes and weaknesses of our tradition. If we're going to take the next step towards maturity, a full-grown Christianity springing from the spirit of Jesus' message, we won't be afraid of these revisions. Especially in light of all the misrepresentations of Jesus out there, who do you say that I am? Becomes an even more important question. I am a passionate follower of Jesus, but not the warrior Jesus of Revelation, or the passive, meek, and mild Jesus of our 1940s Sunday school images, but the radical, life-changing Jesus we meet when we read our Gospels. Empathy and compassion made real in the world. A boat rocker who demands change and transformation. I want more people to see and know and to follow that Jesus. When Janet McKenzie painted Jesus of the People, she said she hoped that portraying Jesus with African-American and feminine attributes would give people pause and remind them that we are all created in God's image. And for me, if that effort rocks just one person's boat and causes them to tear down their narrow, racially myopic vision of Jesus, then it's achieved its goal. So let's not get bogged down in just one image. Let's make space for depictions of Jesus to be relevant for everyone and not force others to embrace our made-up image like it's more accurate than theirs. And always, may we have the grace to remember that people will know we are Christians not by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character, not based on how we look, but by our love, just as Jesus would have it. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.